trying to tell you, y'all.
So let's bring her on. Terry McMillan, how you doing?
I'm fine. Is this Myron?
This is Myron. Terry, how you doing?
Trying to keep hope alive.
Oh, man, you doing a lot of that, Terry.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you something. You kept it up.
You done inspired a movement.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
We got the Terry McMillan earrings, the whole nine.
Wait, how many people are on this phone?
Oh, there's a couple of us.
Oh, yes.
We got Nikki Love Life, Nicole Love Life. We got Anna Redden.
Hey.
We got Big Mo the Boss.
Big Mo's up in the house.
Rocky
Where
Thunder.
Where are you guys? Are you in Philadelphia?
Nope.
No, we're out of Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh,
but
Big Mo over here is from Philly.
Yeah, Big Mo the Boss. I was raised in Philadelphia.
How are you guys tonight?
Good. How you doing, Terry?
Doing it.
I'm fine.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, we appreciate you being there.
I want some popcorn, but I knew I couldn't chew.
Is that right? Somebody get her some popcorn. Get her some popcorn.
Let me come there so I can share your popcorn with you if you like.
And some blood orange red soda.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Red. Right.
Terry, I want to give a shout out to Holly Watson at Penguin Publishing. And
that's nice.
You know, and I want to say to you, you're one of the most iconic legends that we've had on the Midnight Hour Radio Show.
You sure are. Next to George Duke there.
George Duke?
Yes!
Yeah, we had him on our show, God Rest His Soul, about 10 days.
I was getting ready to say.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yes. We had Marilyn McCoo,
too. Same category as him, honey, let me tell you.
Yeah, we had Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
We put
I met them about a month ago or so.
Okay.
Did you?
At a grandmother's or grandparents who take care of their grandchildren's conference
in
Hollywood, of all places.
Wow.
They still look the same, too.
Yeah, they do. They do. They definitely do.
Now, Terry, let's talk about Terry McMillan, the iconic legend, Terry McMillan, writer of Waiting to Exhale, How Stella Got Her Groove Back, and Who Asked You, which is the sequel to Waiting to Exhale. But before
it's not.
It ain't?
No.
Oh, my
Who Asked You is not a sequel. Getting to Happy is a sequel.
Oh, Getting to Happy.
But Who Asked You, my new book, is not a sequel to anything.
Okay.
That's even better.
That's even better. So that's a that's such a we actually read that book a lot. So we actually love it, though. We do. We love the characters in it and everything.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And write some more. Are you writing more?
Well, I mean, it just came out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but are you writing more?
Tell him, say, I'm a writer. That's what I do. Give me a minute. Tell him, say, I'm a writer. Give me a minute.
Well, I started. I have the opening paragraph to a new book, but I don't talk about it until after. I don't talk about anything until after I've done it.
Hey, I don't blame you.
I know that's right.
Well, one thing I want to say to you, Terry, is that you can write. That's for sure.
Well, thanks for that.
Excellent writer.
Who is this?
This is Nikki Love's Life. How are
you? No, I mean the gentleman that just said that.
That was Myron Grace, Terry.
Thank you, Myron.
Yeah, you burned them pages up.
I'm from Michigan, you know, not far from Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
Where you at from Michigan? I actually went to school in Lansing, but my family live in Detroit.
Oh, I'm from Port Huron.
Okay, up near Lansing, then, going that way. Yeah, I'm familiar with that area.
70 miles from Lansing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Shout out to Thomas Cooley Law School, where I went to school. Definitely, Terry, I've been through Port Huron on my way to Lansing quite a few times.
Wow.
That's unfortunate. No, I shouldn't say that.
Where you live now?
Where we were born is important.
Yeah.
Now, Terry, you grew up in New York?
No, I grew up in Michigan.
In Michigan? Okay. See.
Yes, I left Michigan when I was 17 and moved to Los Angeles. Okay. And then from there, I was there for 2 years, and then I went to UC Berkeley. And then from there, I went to Columbia University in New York.
Okay. And that's where all the magic really started happening.
And then
huh?
I turned into a lady of the night.
Of different sorts. Of different sorts.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
Hey, who could?
Hey, we like humor. Believe that.
Right.
Me
Terry,
too.
So what inspired you to become a writer, Terry McMillan?
Well, I'll put it this way. I didn't set out to become a writer.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, my other line is ringing. I'll just ignore it. This is the first. I didn't set out to become a writer. I basically found myself really dissatisfied with a lot of the things that I saw about us as African Americans in particular. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes the way we live, the way we treat each other, that happen to us that in some cases are within our control and some things that are outside of our control. And I wish I could be a magician and fix everything, and I can't. Right. So I decided to write about it.
Right.
So
I want all of us to be. I want all of us to be happy and in love and thriving and successful and assets and not liabilities, and treat each other with dignity and respect. So I get to write about it.
Okay. Was there a particular event or life experience that inspired your book, Waiting to Exhale?
Yeah, I couldn't find a man.
Hold on.
Wait a minute, hold it. You
I find it hard to believe because you're beautiful. So, yeah, I mean, I find it hard to believe.
That was 20-some-odd years ago.
Yeah.
You're still a light-skinned sister.
I mean, I had graduated from college, and a lot of my girlfriends had, you know, we had already been out of college. I mean, I was gone to grad school by then.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was living in New York, and a lot of my friends, we just realized that, wait a minute, what's up with, we can't get a date.
Do you find that when you gain a certain level of education, it makes it more difficult to find a date?
Well, I don't think it makes it more difficult to find a date, but it makes it a little bit more, I would not use the word difficult nowadays, but I think that you get a little pickier.
Okay.
You know, and you want somebody who's also, they don't have to be as educated, but you don't want some. So you don't want somebody just on the street from the street. You just don't.
Exactly.
You don't want somebody who is, and not to say that people from the streets aren't intellectually stimulating. It's not that.
No, exactly.
But you want somebody that you can learn something from.
Exactly.
Share things with.
Someone who's in the challenge you're thinking.
Well, that somebody that you can not so much challenge, but that you can have a. Just like you can enjoy making love to them, you can have a stimulating conversation as well.
Yes,
right.
And intellectually stimulating.
So what she's saying is, she don't want no donkey.
Sure. Right.
That's, a what? A donkey. You don't want no donkey, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
She wants a man who can stimulate her
Peep
mind.
Keep her interest.
That's right.
A companion.
Keep it.
If somebody was a, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of things. I mean, all of us are different. You know, I just put on Twitter, I just said, you know, a man with a nice smile can make your head turn like Linda Blair from The Exorcist.
Wow.
I have a good time on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's right. So check it out. Let me ask you this. Did you get work?
Say it again?
Did you get work? Was you able to work? I'm sorry. Was you able to work with Whitney Houston on Wait and Exhale? Like Whitney Houston and all the cast, was you able to work with them directly when they did turn it into a movie?
Yes, but you know the thing is that I only went to the set a few times, you know, because they sort of made me, and so I was there.
Oh, wait a minute, what you mean they made you?
Well, I wrote the screenplay with another writing partner.
Is that right?
And you know, being on a movie set is kind of boring.
Yeah, but,
I'm a film director, Terry. I know exactly what you mean. This is Myron Grace.
But it was still your baby.
Wait.
Yeah, it was my baby. I mean, I'll put it this way. I mean, I know and met everybody on this was in the film.
Okay.
Okay. And we spent time together even before we started shooting the movie.
Ah.
And, you know, but I got to see a lot of the major scenes, and I went on the set maybe 4 or 5 times because it was a 52-day shoot.
Okay.
And, you know, so I went about 4 or 5 times. But, you know, sometimes it was like watching paint dry. I'm not kidding you, because they shoot the same scene
over and over.
You mean.
Asked me to be an extra.
Said it becomes.
I must have walked across this, and it was 100 and some odd degrees in Arizona. Ooh. I must have walked back and forth in front of this fountain.
So not only.
And finally, I just said, you know what? I don't want to be in this movie.
Right.
Waiting to make a movie.
Right. So some happened with the connection. I'm not sure what it is.
I just heard myself. Can you hear me now?
No. Yeah, we can hear you now. It's better now. It was something wrong with the phone line. But, Terry, I tell you what, we're going to give you about a two-minute break so we can let somebody hear this amazing song, Swoop, from the soundtrack of Waiting to Exhale.
Oh.
Get you a cup of water or something because we want to come back and talk to you about your amazing new book and some other things. On the Midnight Hour Radio Show, we got Terry McMillan.
Terry, cover your ears, please, baby. Cover your ears.
Wait, hold it, Terry.
Cover your ears, Terry.
Terry, that was an amazing song. That was an amazing song. That was Shoop. Is Terry? That the name of the song?
It
Shoop?
It is Shoop.
Shoop. Terry Shoop. McMillan? Are you there?
I never said I could sing, Terry. You never heard me?
I didn't hear you singing.
Oh.
Y'all, you didn't?
God bless
Be
you.
Be glad you did.
We were trying to protect you.
Yeah, we had a box of tissues here for you.
Answer to your prayer. See, now
Lord.
You heard me. Now you heard me, Terry.
Oh, Lord.
No, really, though, that was, did you inspire that soundtrack on Waiting to Exhale, Terry McMillan?
No. that was Forrest Whitaker. And I remember when he played that song to me, I thought, this is kind of boring.
Who, what?
He's saying the same thing over and over again. Shoop, shoop, shoop. And he played it for me before it was done, and he said, what do you think, Terry? This is Forrest, not Babyface. And I said, it's nice. Well, what else was I going to say?
Right.
But then, of course, like, it grew on me. And, you know, I've been on a 16-city book tour, and I just got home a couple of days ago.
Okay.
And I was in my truck driving, and I had the radio on. I listened to XM. And here comes Whitney singing Shoop, Shoop. And I just looked all around the street thinking, wow. And then it was like so quiet in that car. And I could have lost it, but I didn't. I just said, thank you, Whitney.
Yeah.
So you are energized.
So was it any song on that track, that soundtrack that you liked?
Say that again. Was there any song that I did like or didn't?
Or that you did like on the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack?
I liked all of them. I love the Shoop Shoop. When I first heard it, this is before it was on the soundtrack, I was just thinking, she keeps saying the same thing over and over again, so it was completely
exactly.
out of context.
Redundant.
But I think it's one of the best soundtracks ever to me.
Yeah, along with the movie. Exactly.
Yeah.
Along with
no,
the book.
No, but I mean, it's like everybody on that CD sounds good, and they still sound good.
Yeah. Right. I want to give a shout out to Sandra Marie. Terry, she's going to be joining us on the Midnight Hour radio show within the next couple of weeks. She made one of the songs off that soundtrack, Sandra Marie, but she's more of a poet than a songwriter. So, now, let me ask you this question, Terry. This is Terry McMillan on the Midnight Hour radio show. Terry, you've been heard in 14 countries right now, if you didn't know it, over the world.
I have a list of them.
Oh, okay. That's good.
That's good money.
See, she did her homework. Right. That's right.
You're calling me in London.
Is that right? But tell her how many listeners, actual listeners we got.
Yeah. Oh, we got an audience base of 809 million people, but we if 1% listen, that's about 8 million people. You know what I mean?
That's a lot of folk.
Yeah.
There is.
So what I want to ask you, is there any particular country that you want to give a shout out to? You've been to so many, I'm sure.
Well, let me see here. Ghana.
All right.
France, Paris in particular.
Okay.
Senegal, Dominican Republic, Ethiopia, and some parts of Canada.
All right.
Y'all heard that from Terry McMillan, right. the master author, because that's what you are.
Sweden and Switzerland.
Yeah, Ireland.
Ireland. Ugh.
America.
No, I would like to go to Ireland one day. I take that back.
Yeah. What is it about Ireland that would
just
possibly
because
fascinate
it's beautiful.
You? Okay.
Yes. Right up there with Scotland.
Yeah.
Would you look for a pot of gold?
Huh?
Say, would you look for a pot of gold while you're out there?
No.
I have a question. Who are some of the writers or people who impacted your writing style?
Who did what?
Impacted your writing style.
Well, that's a long, long list.
is that right? Wow.
Yeah, that's a
few of your favorites.
Well, no. I can say, you know, you may not have heard of them. One guy's name is Ring Lardner, and one is J.D. Salinger, Zora Neale Hurston, because all of them wrote in a very conversational tone.
Hmm.
Right.
And it was a relaxed tone, and it wasn't highbrow, and they didn't try to do all this onomatopoeia stuff and use a million metaphors. And
yeah.
They just told straightforward stories.
Straightforward.
No.
And it gave me freedom to tell stories in the way that black folks really do talk and not apologize for it.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Now, what's your preferred style of writing?
Style?
Is it the conversational type of style, or is it more autobiographical? Or
no, my work isn't as autobiographical as people think. Even Stella, you know, that was not as autobiographical, just a very small portion of it, in that I went to Jamaica, met a younger man, broke the law, and ended up writing a fantasy about it. And it was long before Jonathan ever even stepped foot in this country. So
So Stella wasn't about you, or was it?
Pardon?
How Stella Got a Groove Back, was it or was it not about you?
The only portion of it that was about me that was realistic was the fact that I went to Jamaica. I just said it. Are you listening?
Yes, ma'am. I heard what you said earlier, but we weren't talking about Stella at first.
But the thing is, I went to Jamaica, and I met this young guy, and, you know, we had a lot of fun.
Okay.
And then I got home, and I realized, oh, my God, what did I do? This is a mess.
No disrespect, you turned him out, huh? We just trying to make you laugh. Ain't nothing wrong with
it. No. But the thing is that I wrote that book in 31 days.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Man, what?
Yeah,
That's amazing. Draft
of it in 31 days. Because wow. I was trying to figure out about this whole double standard, how older men are always going out with younger women.
That's right.
And nobody says anything
exactly.
to them. So I was trying to figure out, oh, my goodness. And at the time, I talked to Jonathan, and I started out as a poem, and then it was going to be a short story. And then I, you know, he said, well, Terry, you said you lie, so just lie. And that's what I did.
Okay.
Because, you know, I was finished with the book before he ever stepped foot in this country.
Okay.
Wow, man.
And, yeah, so you
wasn't
pretty
you
much.
Wasn't you supposed to be on vacation?
Huh?
Wasn't you supposed to be on vacation?
Obviously, it was a vacation, wasn't it?
A vacation that changed the world.
Well, I mean,
home.
That vacation, you know, started your creative juices flowing to be able to write that. So, I mean, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
No, it wasn't.
But, you know,
I mean, regardless of what people think about him and my marriage and all that, I wouldn't trade those years for anything.
Well, you shouldn't.
That's right. No
you
regrets.
Shouldn't. Right.
You should.
None.
And I want to shout out to Brandy Clark and Anthony Hollins, Khadija, and Natasha for listening, because they're listening to you right now.
Well, where
they
are they?
You. Well, they are here in Cleveland. They're one of our close to 3,000 listeners in Cleveland alone.
200,000 listeners.
200,000?
Yeah.
That's where we at now?
That's we
Man,
always had
I 200. Lost track.
We always had
late, how late do you guys stay up?
Well,
depends on who you ask.
Honestly, yeah. So yeah. I think we all have the same problem. We're kind of, you know, night owls, you know.
Yeah, I never sleep, Terry. I'm always talking to somebody from, like, I talk with one of the OJs at 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday. Or,
yeah.
So my phone never stopped ringing. I'm like, never sleep.
You and me both. Try to hang up and get a call back.
I get my sleep. But Cleveland is it's a nice city.
It's
nice folks. I used to have some relatives there.
Oh yeah.
What happened to
them?
They
still might be there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they still might. You don't talk to them.
Do you guys like LeBron or do you guys hate him too?
LeBron.
I like LeBron.
No, I love LeBron.
This Myron Grace. I'm gonna tell you, LeBron, you my brother.
Yeah.
Right on.
Nikki loves life. I love you too, LeBron.
I plead
the fifth.
I hope so.
Right on, LeBron. Big Mo down with you, bro.
I didn't agree with the way he left under the circumstances he left, but he's from our area. You can't knock him. You got to give him his credit.
Well, I tell you what.
What?
There are people all over the world that get offered a raise,
Exactly.
And they have to travel sometimes outside their venue where they go, and they take the job.
Exactly. You trying to tell me, you know, if they tell you, okay, well, you're making $100,000, you're not going to jump at the chance to make $25
million? And get out of this cold.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Get out of this cold and move to Miami.
You're going
to
run like the wind.
I don't blame them, but, you know, I just thought it was tacky what that owner did.
Oh, of course. I mean, that seems like Cleveland owners, period. We can't catch a break, you know?
He was racist is what he was.
We cannot catch a break.
Right.
Get that subject. Okay.
Back to your writing style. Yeah. What message are you trying to give readers when you're writing? Do you have any particular message?
Hope that no matter how tough things get, you know, instead of just sitting back waiting for somebody or something to help make things better, you know, that makes you very passive. It means that your life is always going to be based on how you react to things. Mm-hmm. And that makes you a victim. And what a dreary, dreadful life you'll live if you have to live like that. And so the idea is that I try to write about characters who are going through some stuff, and they basically are being tested. And that's what I think all of us are being anyway, is tested. And so it's how you even just put one foot in front of the other is what I believe in. And so I try to give my readers hope. You don't have to solve all your problems, but at least try.
Let me ask you this. What was your deepest fall in life?
My deepest fall?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if you would call it a fall.
Okay.
What do you mean by that?
Like, you know, what was your lowest point of your life that
my lowest point?
Yes.
Oh, I used to drink.
For real? Okay.
Yeah. When I was, I didn't drink very long.
Right.
But I used to drink. And I got really drunk.
Okay.
But this is before I really started writing.
Okay.
Because I realized my son's father said to me, because I locked him out of the house for 7 hours. I was upstairs, passed out, unconscious. Mm-hmm. He couldn't get back in. And I ended up going to AA. He said, are you going to be one of those writers that's a drunk?
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God, no. So I went to AA a couple of days later, and it was a brother in there we were like, ooh, this was creepy. So I said, I need a drink. Shit.
That's all right.
Beep, beep, beep.
I'm sorry. And so he and I went to the liquor store and got my bottle. He got his. I don't even know his name. And then a couple of days later, I went to a different AA group meeting in Midtown Manhattan where everybody was in suits and everything. And I was like, oh, well, so these are upscale alcoholics.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh, wow.
And I went for 90 days. And that was 33 years ago, and I haven't had a drink since.
All right,
that's
now. Yes. All right.
Congratulations on that.
Now, Terry, we got a mutual friend, Kenneth Hall, at TAC Entertainment. He said he met you a long time ago when you used to live in Los Angeles. He said your mother introduced you to him. He was and y'all went on a date. I'm not sure how true that is, but I just want to give him a shout out.
Right. Tell him, Terry. Living in delusion.
She like, no, not Cleveland.
Well, Ken, you know, I just had to ask that, dog. I had to ask it.
He had no hope.
You know what hope is? Hope is having optimistic perception early.
I can't hear you.
Right. I said hope is having optimistic perception early.
Hope is what?
Having optimistic perception early.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's right.
We would all be doomed without it.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, Terry, I know you, before we get to your new book, Who Asked You, I want to play one more song from the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack, because that was just such a magnificent soundtrack.
Which song?
Such a magnificent book.
Right. Which song?
Such a magnificent writer.
She wants to know what song you want to drop.
Toni Braxton, Let It Flow. How about that, Terry? Terry McMillan on the Midnight Hour Radio Show, Waiting to Exhale soundtrack. Toni.
Almost there.
Wait.
Oh, God.
Let it flow. Let it flow.
Terry, you know what? If he don't stop singing, I quit.
I got your back, man.
I'm going to give you back that last check.
He's stupid.
You know what?
I wanted to give a shout out to Kevin Chilhurt. He's also listening and is a fan of yours, so also in the Cleveland area.
Hello, Cleveland.
I wanted to say that, you know, I definitely appreciate your message of hope, because I'm, you know, kind of like that too. I post a lot of hopeful messages on Facebook, you know, with my little period end of story, you know, thing I go mm-hmm. into. But, you know, I definitely think that that's what's lacking. There's enough negativity in the world, and if we have more hopeful people, you know, it might kind of change the flow of things.
Well, yes, and so does voting.
Yeah, that too. That too.
Get some of those 200,000 and make sure that they are registered and that they have a photo ID.
Oh, yeah.
Get some of these Republicans out of here, out of office.
Yeah, we definitely have like a strong political drive here when we vote.
And now we got another one. Her name is Terry McMillan. She ain't holding back no punches, you know what I mean?
They
you know
what? Me on Twitter.
I know, that's right.
Terry, I tell you, you know, we're going to get to your new book in a second. Who asked you?
Yeah, asked you.
But yeah, who asked me?
You guys said you wanted to have some fun.
That's what
hey,
you're doing.
Hey,
we appreciate the fun.
Me and Mo over here trying to have some fun, Terry. We're having with you.
I have a steak I'm broiling.
Oh shoot! I need to come where you at.
Right.
I love steak.
Well, I have a nice thick ribeye.
I'm sorry for you people.
I'm marinating in vinegar.
I'm sorry for you vegetarians, but I love steak. I think I need to go to Terry's house.
We like lettuce. And
we'll come, but we ain't going to need the steak. We'll eat.
I'm eating some steak.
They work out. The rest of us fat. They work out. They work out, Terry.
I ain't fat. I'm big bone.
We love our rabbit food.
My granddaddy.
I got fat on my big bones.
Hey, Terry, my granddaddy used to have me down in the kitchen in Alabama in the 90-degree heat. With a pot of beans and salt pork for
yeah. Oh God, yes.
Yeah. Right, there you go.
Oh, that's what I grew up on in Michigan.
I know that's right.
Uh-huh. But I don't eat any salt pork.
Yeah.
No neck bones, none of that stuff. I can't stand it.
Nah.
No.
It's like I season.
I'll put smoked turkey and some beans and all that.
Yeah.
And
right.
Collard
yeah.
greens and all
smoked
that.
Turkey butts.
What? Oh wow!
What the butts?
You know what?
Smoked turkey butts.
If you ever make it to Cleveland, just come to the studio so you can just whoop Mo.
Okay.
You know, Terry.
I wish I'd been able to come there on my book tour.
I know that would have been
a lot of places
smooth.
That I should have gone that they didn't set me up for. But next time around,
tell them don't be hating, Terry.
Back, I'll come to Cleveland.
Tell them don't be hating.
We will be
don't
right
hate.
Here.
Detroit, I did Chicago.
Yeah,
I've even been to Toledo.
Wow! Really?
Right. Oh,
and
right.
that and couldn't go. Oh, wow!
Well, not this tour.
Well, you know, Terry, I want to give our program manager Glendora Barres a chance to ask you a question, because she liked the Cleveland version of how Stella got her groove back.
Oh.
Corporate superstar, Lord. Living the suburbs, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna give her an opportunity to ask you a question, Glendora okay. Barres, program director, of the Midnight Hour Radio Show.
Hi, Terry. It's Glendora again. I just spoke to you a few minutes ago
yes,
off
I was
air.
Gonna say. Okay. Hi.
Hi. Okay. I have a question for you.
Okay.
What are some of the future projects you have coming up?
Well, A Day Late and a Dollar Short is going to be a Lifetime film with Whoopi Goldberg, Ving Rhames, Tashina Arnold, Anika Noni Rose, Kimberly Elise.
Oh my!
And Mekhi Phifer.
Wow!
It comes out in February.
That's gonna be
Terry. How much bigger can you get? What you trying to do? Take over the world?
Pardon?
How you trying to take over the world? Because you just named some names that's just gonna blow that film out of the water.
And it's really good too. Because I went to Toronto and watched a few of those scenes. No, it's gonna be pretty. They've done a really good job.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm not crazy about Lifetime movies, but...
I know that's right. Oh, Lord.
Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We on the phone with Terry McMillan, who is the most... Waiting to exhale, how Stella got her groove, A Day Late and a Dime Short. Who asked you? And whatever. So many different things. I'm going to give a shout-out for you, Terry McMillan, to Ghana, Ethiopia, Senegal, Ireland, England, Switzerland, Sweden, France, Germany, United States, Hong Kong, Dominican Republic, Canada, and even Nigeria.
Terry, ask him, who asked you?
Oh, no, I dare not say that. I'm the one with a big mouth, let me tell you.
So let's get to your new book, Who Asked You? Give another shout-out to Holly Watson at Penguin Publishing U.S., Who Asked You is such an amazing book. Betty Jean Butler. Tell us about that character, Terry. Betty Jean Butler from Who Asked You.
Well, Betty Jean just happens to be, she's one of the main characters in the book. And, you know, she's 56 years old in Los Angeles, 2001. And she's got three adult children, one of whom is in prison, one of whom is a chiropractor, and lives in Portland, Oregon. And then she has a daughter who's a crackhead.
Okay, because she's the matriarch, right?
Well, I guess you could call her a matriarch. I hesitate to use that term.
Well, let me ask you this. When you write in your books, do you already have in mind who's going to, or who you would like to play the certain parts of each character?
You mean as what, as a movie?
Yeah, because...
No, I don't think of any of my... I've never thought of any of my books as films.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't write them to become movies. It just so happens that it worked out that way.
No, when you write, they're movie written. Because I read this book.
She a master. A
I
master
know.
Author.
That's what we're trying to tell her. She keeps saying, no, don't tell me that. No, no, you are a master writer. You understand me? Do you understand
me? Well, I appreciate you saying it, but I don't see this book as a film at all.
But it is. I'm trying to tell you something.
I don't see it.
Okay.
You but, know, I don't really
but,
see it.
But anyway,
but I love the people. I love the people in this book. I love my little character Luther more than any of them.
Okay.
Right. Oh, okay. But I will say, I will say this: the one character, the matriarch that Anna just got finished speaking on, which is the lady that you're saying,
Betty Jean.
Betty Jean, right? The first person I thought of to play that part was Vanessa Williams.
Oh God, no.
Yeah, but that's who came to my mind.
When I think of matriarchs, I think of someone strong, like really strong in nature, but very womanly. But, you know, when they need to, you know, speak or, you know, convey themselves, they have that strong nature.
Angela Bassett.
I thought of Angela Bassett.
Yeah, someone like
that. No, not Angela. You know what? Stop trying to cast a movie that's not
in the movie. I'm trying to get it ready for
you. I'm trying to help you out.
And I'm serious. I really don't see this as a film. I don't.
All right. Yeah. Well, that might be one surprise you may get.
That's a great book, though. I mean, you got so many characters in there.
I appreciate that. But the thing is that, I mean, in real life, if you stop and think about the level or the number of people that are in your life on an intimate level.
Yes.
In terms of just family members, and then you think of your close friends, and then you think of your colleagues. It's a nice bunch of folks.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
And you know
right.
each one of them, you know their idiosyncrasies, you know their weaknesses, their flaws, their virtues.
Right.
And so all I did was sort of shrunk that circle.
Okay, so
that it was palatable to some extent on paper.
So is
that's
it,
all.
So is it loosely based on some of
no.
your? Okay,
no,
okay.
I'm not a grandmother.
No,
I don't know
no,
any
not
crackheads. No. I went online and went on YouTube to find out how you smoke crack.
Oh wow, that's
and I had quite a few people to look at. I couldn't even believe it. And one of them was a couple that was smoking it in one of my favorite parks in Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
And I was you know.
Well, Terry, I tell you, it's a lot of crackheads in Cleveland, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I thought it was sort of like a dead high.
No, I can take you through East Cleveland and, yeah.
I didn't see any crack.
It's like, it's a lot of, I mean, it's like, it's kind of, and this was 2001 I was writing about.
Yeah.
You know, and back then I was in New York. And, you know, back then crack was really big, but it's, you know, I mean, I know there are drug addicts everywhere. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But it's a cheap high.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
You know, for you to have written this book so well, it's amazing that you say you went on YouTube because this character, Trinetta.
Trinetta was doing it, wasn't she?
Right. Trinetta was tripping.
Hey, let me tell you, when I had her going at men's bathroom, I was right there with. See, you have to understand, you know, the thing is this, is I, you know, as a result of writing from a crackhead's point of view, it's like she wasn't a bad person.
No.
And I know for a fact that most drug addicts don't want to be drug addicts.
Right.
It's no fun being strung out. And you got to struggle to get high again and again and again. It's a drag. Right. You know, and if some of them could figure out an easier way to change their lives and do things differently, I'm pretty sure they would. And that's where I was coming from. That's why I was just, I was not trying to show her as just some lowlife.
Yeah.
You know, she really wanted to do better. But, you know, when you got an addiction, it's got a stronghold on you that it's hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. Yeah. It doesn't mean that, and I empathize.
Yeah.
I do. And that's why I wrote her like that. Right. You know, but I never smoked any crack. But
yeah,
I know enough about addiction to get it.
Yeah, I think Dexter, to me, sounds like a lot of young men today. In that, you know, he gets high on marijuana and, you know, some seem to not be able to stay out of jail, you know, for whatever reason, you know, maybe environmental or other reasons.
Environmental, well.
And we're talking about Who Asked You, Terry McMillan's new book.
Yeah, environmental in terms of, you know, sometimes you have young men with egos, you know, that are larger than life, and their group of buddies also have egos, and it becomes environmental because it's where they grow up at, and they learn a certain behavior, and they don't know how to.
What's going on in Chicago?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah,
right. You know, I was in Chicago a week ago, and I was speaking about 70 seniors from inner city high schools, and I asked them, raise your hand if you know somebody's been killed.
Wow.
And it was about 12 of them raised their hand.
Wow. Yeah,
that's a shame.
And I said, you know what? The one thing you have to stay out of those parks, okay?
Yeah.
Terry, you know what? I want you to tell people how to get in touch with you, how to get your books. We're down to about 5 minutes. We don't never want to let you go.
We sure don't.
I got your pictures all over my wall.
I'm waiting for somebody else to say that to me.
Shoot.
I don't ever want to let you go.
All right, Big Mo.
Terry, you know what? I had to do this every shot. Just
that was somebody
just
else, though. And all right, that was somebody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Big Mo.
That's true. He didn't specify who.
And Big Mo definitely has a lot of personality.
Well, I really appreciate your interest. You know, follow me on Twitter or Facebook.
Okay, so you are on Facebook. Okay.
But Twitter is better.
Yeah, I heard you say you love Twitter.
I have like 230,000 followers.
Woo! Lord. Wow.
And 122,000 on Facebook, but I prefer Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. Quick, yeah.
I'm serious. Twitter is you can do a lot in 140 characters.
Yeah, right. You're right. Yeah. Right.
Believe me, them girls
use it to self-promote.
Right, them girls know, too. Them girls that work at the clubs and stuff, they be using it, unfortunately. They know about that. But how can people...
We ain't even gonna go there.
How can people purchase your book? Who asked you?
They can go to a bookstore.
Okay. And do you also like sell online, like Amazon or any of those?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. If they go, I have a website. Okay.
Okay.
I have a website, and on my website it shows. You know, you can order the book from my website.
Okay. I'm trying to keep them focused, but they having so much fun.
You was hilarious. You know that, right? You know you can write comedy.
I'm trying to keep them focused, but they're having so much fun. They're falling out in here.
You got comedy all in you. I'm sorry.
All of my books. Did anybody read about Nurse Kim?
Yeah.
Nurse Kim was something else. She's
a nasty little something.
Yeah, I see.
You mean nice? Yeah, she's a little nasty little something. We ain't gonna say
taking advantage of Lee David
That remind me of the girls in Cleveland. That remind me of the girls in Cleveland. Nurse Kim.
Lee David don't seem to mind.
Don't you dare stereotype those women like that.
The whole point, Terry.
You don't know what people do behind closed doors.
You don't match your match.
A lot of people will do whatever they can get away with.
Yeah, but we know about the tricks up close. I'm sorry, I had to say it. I speak my mind a lot too.
Well, I hope the little trick or treaters there don't get snowed out.
Terry, you know what? I got to give you an opportunity. You one of the greatest writers that ever lived, and
you're going too far.
No, really, it's the truth. I guarantee
it's
you.
You got to give credit where it's due.
100 years from now, somebody gonna be reading your book. You know
what
I'm saying?
Well, it feels like that's what's already passed. I mean,
baby, you ain't that old.
I really appreciate you.
You're a young lady. You got a lot of life.
And your support.
You know, I gotta ask you about
brothers who read.
I gotta ask you about Oprah. I mean,
what about Oprah?
What is it like? I mean, you probably one of the closest people that's ever been to her. What's that like? I mean,
are you kidding me? One of the closest people.
I mean, you know her. You know her. You know what I mean?
Oprah is. I mean, she's iconic, and I mean, the thing is, I have the utmost respect for her because she has done. Unlike some of these hip hoppers out here who are millionaires who don't do anything but spend their money and you know,
cars and
throw
useless
all their bling
stuff
bling in your face, but you don't hear about what they do for other un. You know, underprivileged people
exactly.
in the world sure. and in this country and children. You don't hear about that.
And the only one I can think of that comes to mind right now is David Banner. And mm-hmm. he putting, you know, college funds together for children.
Who is David Banner?
He's a hip-hop artist who was actually taking his money and putting it towards college educations for deserving students.
Is he a singer or rapper?
He's a rapper.
What? He messed with G-Unit.
G-Unit. Oh, okay. I know. I heard of them.
Yeah. 50 Cent. See, that's one of his.
I mean,
homies.
Even like Dr. Dre, you know, he gave $32 million to USC.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
You know, for the business division, but it's basically most of it is so that young African Americans who live right down the street from USC, not literally, but they do.
Yeah.
So that they can get opportunities to go to business school.
Exactly.
You know, and then a lot of people got on his case.
Well, as you know, though, a lot of times you don't hear about all the positive things that they do.
That's partially true. That is partially true. Right. But the bottom line is this. If you're going to boast about what you do with Barney's and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and what kind of plane you get and, you know, all of this, then what you do, the philanthropic things that you do should also make the news.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. Well, you know what, Terry? It's been fun, and I hate to let you go. I wish I could come eat some steak and potatoes with you.
I know you hate to let me go.
And I would make you some sweet potato pie, some of that down-home country sweet potato pie.
Well, Thanksgiving is next month.
Right. But you know what? World, all over the world, I know y'all listening. That's Terry McMillan on the phone, superstar writer. Friend of Oprah Winfrey's, who is the richest black woman in the world.
Oh, yeah, she is.
Which is unbelievable.
Terry going to be rolling right behind her.
No, but I hope everybody tonight that you levitate.
Yes.
Terry McMillan. On the Midnight Hour Radio Show.
What talk about?
Terry, my program director, want to say goodbye to you properly, so please don't hang up. But thank you, Terry, for coming on the Midnight Hour Radio Show. And just like Don Cornelius, we're going to leave you an open invitation to come back anytime you want.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. Much respect.
All right,
thank
Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's it.
Greg Millen on the Midnight Hour Radio Show, and we're going to be right back on News Talk 1490 WERE.